Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And we want to thank you for listening to our Treat Addiction podcast. The information in this podcast cannot replace your seeking professional help. Please contact your primary care provider so they can address your concerns and individualize your treatment. Sugar is everywhere, obviously, and many a time just hiding. And yet we can't dispense with it completely because glucose is the only substance the brain can survive on. We're going to try today to explain the good, the bad, and the ugly about sugar.
So what is sugar addiction? It's a pattern of excessive consumption of sugary tools and beverages, foods and beverages. And as Dr. Islam just mentioned, it's everywhere. It's often accompanied by cravings and withdrawal symptoms. And I said that. Yes, I did. Withdrawal-like symptoms. You've heard these words before, and you'll hear more as we go on. While sugar addiction is not officially classified as an addiction in the same way as substances like drugs or alcohol, sugar can activate the brain's reward system, leading to behaviors and physiological responses that resemble addiction. Poor diet is one of the leading causes of death in the United States, along with tobacco use, high blood pressure, and being overweight. Healthy food choices can extend longevity and reduce the risk of heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, and cancer. And I know sometimes when you listen, you think, blah, 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 blah. But these are truths that we're hoping that you will take in. The total annual cost related to a poor diet is about $50 billion.
With a B.
With a B. And you know what that means? That means the system is not our friend. The system is making money from our poor choices. And the medical costs related to obesity are about $150 billion
a year.
With a B. The system is not our friend. So we have to seek after how to be healthy.
And added sugars should really be limited in the diet and comprise less than 10% of the total calories consumed. So we'll give you a little idea because 10% is just like a figure. And these sugars often come from sweetened beverages and processed foods. I don't know whether our audience knows, but I just want them to visualize. A can of Coke has 10 teaspoons of sugar. A bottle of Coke or Pepsi has 15 teaspoons of sugar. So if you take a visual of a glass of water and stand there and add 10 teaspoons, because normal people in a cup of coffee or tea, you'll have a maximum generally of 2 teaspoons of sugar. So imagine 10 teaspoons. And if a person has times 5 or times 8 of those in a day, what we are doing, how much sugar we are consuming. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the excess weight, the intake of sugar-sweetened beverages is associated with an increased risk of coronary artery disease, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and gout. Now, naturally occurring sugars like fruit or milk are not considered added sugars. But so people have this, and I think particularly in Pakistan, where I come from, people think that fruit juice is just great. But fruit juice should really be limited to small daily amounts because they are very high in calories, mm-hmm. because you've just squeezed all the sugar out.
Right.
And it's much better to have the benefit of the fiber mm-hmm. in the whole fruit.
Absolutely.
And it's really important to get people to drink plain water rather than the sweetened beverages. And sort of sweetening them. We'll talk about the non-nutritive sweeteners in a minute. But that is still more acceptable than replacing you. We talk to patients and I ask them, how much water do you drink a day? And I have had answers of none. Mm-hmm. Because their entire consumption is that of sugar-sweetened beverages. Mm-hmm. and coffee.
Mm-hmm. I have found the same.
It's really incredible.
Mm-hmm. But I have to confess, okay, this is like, don't judge me, radio world, do not judge me. But so one day I went to get my regular sweet tea from McDonald's.
Oh, that's really damaging.
I know, it's between you and us, just us right here. So I go to the drive-thru and I ask for my sweet tea and she gives me my large. I'm sorry, it is a large. You can't just get a small sweet tea. So I take it with me and I take a sip and say, ugh, this is awful. It was non-sweetened. So I had to go back around. I said, this is not sweet. She gave me another one and I take it and I sip and it was the same. I say, okay, someone's trying to get me today. I'm having my sweet tea. I don't care what happens. I'm having my sweet tea.
You were getting indicators and you weren't listening.
I know I was not. So I go back inside. I went inside this time. I said, hey, this is not sweet. She said, oh, I think there's a problem. So she gives me another one. And I said, hey, wait, that's okay. Just give me the same thing. I'll just take some sugar and I'll sweeten it myself. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to put 3 or 4 packs.
Oh.
So I started putting 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. Oh, my goodness. I did not realize how much sugar was in my sweet tea until
probably
that
10.
Day. I think I lost track because I had a bunch of little things.
Oh, you went ahead?
I had to get it sweet. I had to get the flavor.
Oh, you were on the track.
I was on the track. So I said, oh, my. So from then on, I had to dial it back and maybe get it less often because I was getting it often because I really liked the taste of McDonald's.
And I don't see that weight gain in you because I saw a patient of mine, and I just remembered from your story that she had gained a whole lot of weight. Mm-hmm. And so I finally sat down with her and I did a full dietary evaluation. And then it turned out that she had suddenly discovered, because sweet tea from the fast food places is a relatively new thing,
yes.
Right?
So good.
And she had discovered it.
Yes.
And she was doing it on a regular basis. And I was like, oh, goodness, it's sweet tea.
Yeah.
And then when she was able to remove it, she lost all the weight.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how much sugar there is in it. Incredible.
I found out. But I'm an avid tennis player, so I usually get it on my way too. And then so I guess I can burn it up. But my eyes were opened. My eyes were opened.
That's an incredible story.
And so as we morph into signs of sugar addiction, I think I probably did have a little bit of cravings also for it because there was sometimes I had to have my sweet tea.
Yeah, there you go.
One of the signs of sugar addiction is the cravings for these various sweets. And it's a persistent desire for that sugary snack or drink. And then difficulty controlling portion sizes, you want to have more. I cannot imagine having a small or a medium. It has to be a large.
Which is our culture too,
which
right?
Which is our culture as well. You remember when things became biggie sizes, everything was biggie size. I remember when that happened. Another sign is feeling happy or energized after consuming your beverage or your whatever your drug of choice is for the sugar. And then using the sugar as a coping mechanism, turning to sweets for comfort or stress relief. Now, I know someone out there is listening, thinking, we're talking about them. Well, you're right. We're talking about you. You're using it as a comfort. You know?
Even though we've been victims ourselves.
Oh, shh. We don't count. We're pointing them to the direction. We don't have to go also. We also can have withdrawal symptoms, feeling sluggish, irritable, and sometimes even have headaches, similar to people with coffee and those kinds of consumptions. So a good case example is Jane, who's a 34-year-old marketing professional. She started noticing that she couldn't get through her afternoons without a sugary snack. Around 3 p.m. every day, she would feel an intense energy slump, and she would grab a candy bar or a sugary coffee drink to perk herself up. Over time, this habit became automatic. She found herself thinking about sweets even when she wasn't particularly tired. When Jane decided to cut back, she experienced some headaches, irritability for the first few days. And then eventually, she replaced the sugary snacks with protein-rich options like nuts and yogurt and felt much better, and she could go through without the crashes. And I have a family member that I'm hoping that when I send her this link, she will make some changes as well. Not me, another person.
That was a quick quick save. And it really reminds, you know, this thing, this anecdote that you talk about how Pavlovian, how reflexive a habit becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So you mm-hmm. see that very well in what happened to this person in terms of wanting and craving the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that sugar is so addictive is because of a few reasons. And the primary reason is good old dopamine.
Good old
dopamine. So it causes a dopamine release. And that trigger creates a temporary feeling of pleasure. And then the other reason is what I call the insulin effect. Mm-hmm. So blood sugar spikes and crashes. So when we ingest a sugar-sweetened beverage, our body, the best computer ever made, releases a bunch of insulin. And what the insulin does is it crashes. It brings down the sugar because mm-hmm. that's what the job of the insulin is. Mm-hmm. And if the sugar level is very high, there is a consonant or proportionate release of insulin. Mm-hmm. And so the fall in the glucose is also going to be a lot lower mm-hmm. Than it would have been with sugar that was ingested like with fruit. Mm-hmm. And these rapid spikes followed by the sharp drops create a cycle of craving because the body understands that the only way to release that discomfort or relieve that discomfort is to have more sugar. Mm-hmm. So now you are a hamster and mm-hmm. you are just running
chasing,
the wheel.
Chasing.
And then there's emotional and habitual factors. There's emotional eating and ingrained habits around sugary foods, and they contribute to the cycle. So we have another example of, we call him Tom, who prided himself on eating healthy but didn't realize how much sugar he was consuming in his granola bars. And this is important to know. People think, oh, granola bars, they're so healthy.
It's healthy.
Well, they are packed with preservatives, mm-hmm. additives, mm-hmm. high fructose corn syrup, and loads mm-hmm. of sugar. So please be aware. Flavored yogurts and salad dressings. Despite mm-hmm. not eating obvious desserts, he mm-hmm. was constantly craving more foods. And then when he started reading labels, so reading labels, put on your glasses, take a little time at the grocery store and read the label. Mm-hmm. He was shocked at how much sugar was in everyday foods. He swapped those processed items for whole foods and saw a dramatic decrease in his cravings. And he describes his journey as a wake-up call to the hidden ways in which sugar sneaks into our diets, which is really, I think, quite the conspiracy from the billion-dollar industry called the food industry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And sadly, even though we know what we know, we still like what we like, we're still going to consume it. But we just want you to be more aware and start making some small changes. So why is overconsumption of sugar not a good thing? Well, the obvious is the weight gain and the obesity and the ensuing health problems that come with just gaining the weight, but also diabetes, high blood pressure, tooth decay, chronic inflammation. And as a side note, for those who like to consume sugars, it is a good idea to brush your teeth before you go to bed and not let all that sugar remain on your teeth because that's what's aggravating the tooth decay. It's a good idea.
And it's really important because people, you know, in my addicted patients, they have very poor dental mm. conditions. Mm. And people blame, they call it, oh, meth mouth. It's yeah. not meth mouth. Yeah. It actually is the whole lifestyle that yeah. goes with addiction yeah. because frequently they will have like 6 cans of Mountain Dew mm-hmm. and the last yeah. drink of the day is Mountain Dew yeah. and it is in bed.
Yeah.
And there's no brushing of the teeth.
There's no brushing.
At that time. So the teeth are completely, mm-hmm. You know.
All that sugar just stays around your teeth.
Yeah.
And even if they were to just drink some water, just to rinse your mouth out, just kind of get rid of some of that sugar that's dancing around. We've said it. We've put it out there. Hopefully somebody received it and it's going to make some changes. And the chronic inflammation is a real thing as well.
It is.
A lot of people who have chronic pain, they have found that increase, a lot of sugar consumption, they have more pain.
Yes.
More aches and pain.
Yes.
Cut it back and you'll see a difference. But then it's like I had a family member, he said he has allergy to milk products. So he has his little pills. He took that before he could consume it because sometimes people will eat it anyway, even though they know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But
it's that craving.
Mm-hmm. And even if you don't crave it, I think you just want it. I mean, I think there was that Matrix movie where the guy said, you know, I know this is not real, but it sure tastes good. You know, it was one of the characters in the Matrix. If anybody's a Matrix fan. But across the world, the consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages is responsible for about 340,000 deaths each year from type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. That's a lot. And another example that we can share with you is Mike, that's the name we'll call him. Mike is a college student. He relied on sugary snacks to fuel his late-night study sessions. What started as a quick pick-me-up turned into binging on cookies, ice cream, and sugary cereals. After a few months, Mike realized he was gaining a lot of weight and feeling more sluggish during the day. Cutting back wasn't easy. The cravings were intense. He began replacing the sugary foods and fresh fruit and herbal teas at night. And the first week was tough, but he found that his focus improved once his blood sugar stabilized.
Yeah, and taking from that, that people make these changes and take away the sugar and make these healthy food choices. But sometimes a healthy food choice is not made because you go from the frying pan into the fire because the craving for soda, what we call pop in the Midwest.
Yes.
My children tell me, why do you call it soda? Are you from the Northeast? Yeah. I mean, no, I just call it soda.
That's what I know it as, a soda. And then when I went to South for college, they call it, I said, what's a pop?
Exactly. So people switch from regular soda to diet soda. Mm-hmm. So we really need to, we want to bring forth to you the issues with what we call non-nutritive mm-hmm. sweeteners. Mm-hmm. These are high-intensity sweeteners, and they're typically non-caloric or very low in calories. Mm-hmm. And they have completely pervaded our system. Some of them are naturally occurring, plant-derived. Others are synthetic. And due to recommendations to limit the sugar intake, it's just been, the food industry has just gone from one point, one issue to the other. And most people are not aware of the presence of non-nutritive sweeteners in the processed foods and beverages they consume and in the pharmaceutical and personal care products that they use. And in the United States, non-nutritive sweeteners are not required to be listed on food or drink labels unless a threshold amount is reached except for saccharin. Mm-hmm. And that's the only one in which the disclosure is needed. Mm-hmm. Because saccharin is very old mm-hmm. and it has been proven to cause cancer. And therefore, we are still working on the other non-nutritive sweeteners because the food industry is lobbying against our health and for their money. So the health effects related to non-nutritive sweeteners is that they increase the risk of type 2 diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, mm-hmm. and what we call all-cause mortality, or death from all causes. So this is a very interesting, when I was putting this together, I remembered I had a patient who had these strange numbness and tingling mm-hmm. in different parts of the body. So what we do in medicine is we combine or we integrate the patient's symptoms and signs and physical exam to a what we call a tentative diagnosis or provisional diagnosis. And for the life of me, it was kind of bizarre. So I could not integrate it into one diagnosis or a provisional diagnosis. And then a part of me said, you know, this sounds like MS, multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. And it was, so over the few visits, I finally decided that, you know what, let me just refer him to neurology. So we made the appointment and everything. And then I came across this article which talked about non-nutritive sweeteners causing aspartame mm-hmm. equal. And in those days, now it's a different sweetener, but in those days, soda was sweetened with aspartame. And that person was having 8 bottles of Pepsi a day.
Wow.
Diet Pepsi. And I was like, oh. And it's really amazing how things work mm-hmm. In life, that you're trying to solve this problem and boom, it just comes right in front of you. And so I called the person and I said, are you having diet soda? And they said, oh, yeah, I have 8 bottles of diet Pepsi mm-hmm. a day.
Yeah. It's diet.
And what's wrong with you, doc? It's diet. Yeah. It's diet. So I said, can you just not? And then before you see the neurologist, let me have you see me back mm-hmm. in a few weeks. And he came back and the symptoms had resolved.
Wow. Wow.
I will never forget that. Mm-hmm. We don't know the exact mechanism by which consumption of non-nutritive sweeteners adversely affects the health, but we think there might be changes in the gut microbiome about all the organisms mm-hmm. in the bowel. alterations in sweet preferences, because when you have something like diet soda, mm-hmm. you are liable to go with a hamburger. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have diet soda with a real, you know, grilled chicken. It's not going to taste all that hot. Right. And there are impacts on the gut-brain signaling process. So we really feel that we need to replace diet products mm-hmm. with water and non-sweetened beverages, not a whole bunch of fruit juice. And because frequently the soda that is consumed is caffeinated, mm-hmm. so in the withdrawal, there's going to be a withdrawal from the caffeine. Mm-hmm. So I just tell patients that, you know, use 2 extra strength Tylenol during the weaning process. If you're brave, just stop altogether. Otherwise, just wean down. Mm-hmm. And then when you get a headache, use the Tylenol instead of saying that, no, I can't deal with it and, you know, ruin your health forever.
It's amazing how people don't want to drink water, though. I have people who tell me, I don't like water.
Yes, they do.
I'm just not going to do it.
And they'll say zero. That just completely blows me away that they don't drink any water.
And I compare it for people. Like I said, you know, it's like washing clothes with the same dirty water. Your kidneys, they're trying to filter all the bad things from your
toxins.
Body. You want to use clean water, not just dirty water, to wash the same clothes, blah, blah, blah. And they look at me with this, oh, whatever, there she goes again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That can happen.
Another friend is high fructose corn syrup.
Oh, yes.
It's amazing how ubiquitous this baby is. It's a sweetener made from starch. From cornstarch. Why is it bad for you? Well, the same things we've said over and over again. These things can contribute to heart disease, diabetes, fatty liver. And fatty liver is becoming more and more problematic, you know.
It's the second highest cause for liver transplantation. Mm. And I'm told like in 2050 on, it'll be the highest reason beyond hepatitis C.
Wow. It's incredible to me. And yet, some people don't want to make the changes. But in America, we are eating huge doses of sugar, especially high fructose corn syrup. It's a sweetener and it's cheaper and it's just added. It sweetens more. And so I would like to recommend that our listeners maybe pause for a moment and go check out their cupboard and go check out their refrigerators and just look at a few of your products and see what's in it.
And what it does really is it causes visceral fat, mm-hmm. which is fat around your belly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is metabolic syndrome, mm-hmm. and that really increases your risk for heart disease.
Yes, yes. How much are we consuming? But in recent history, we've gone from maybe 20, 30 teaspoons a year to
this
now.
Another one. Oh,
to
God.
17 to 34 teaspoons. When I read that, I said 17 to 34 teaspoons daily, 100 pounds of sugar annually. That's a lot of sugar. That's a half pound a day for every man, woman, and child in America.
Half a pound of sugar. I cannot.
Uh-uh.
So it's unbelievable.
You said this already, that the average 20-ounce soda has about 15 teaspoons of sugar in it. And so I'm picturing my teaspoon, 1, 2, 3, 4, and keep adding past 10, go up to 15, and so on.
It's really quite a difficult thing to get your mind wrapped around, but it's really half a pound of sugar. I mean, I don't have any sugar in my tea, so I cannot imagine half a pound of sugar a day.
I just felt like you were throwing shade at me for my sweet tea there for a minute, but I'm just not going to listen because my sweet tea is still so good. But it's true, though. It's true. That's how attached
That's
we
how
are.
It That's attracts. How attracts. Yes. That's, it's yes. magnetic.
Mm-hmm.
The attraction is magnetic.
And as part of the chemical process used to make high fructose corn syrup, the glucose and fructose, which are naturally bound together, they become separated. And this allows the fructose to do as much damage as it does because it turns on the factory of fat production in your liver. And imagine that. This leads to fatty liver, as we said earlier, causing so many health problems in Americans even today. This in turn leads to diabetes, which is a pre-diabetic situation.
And I really like that word, diabetes.
Diabetes, I liked it too.
It was awesome.
I liked it too. So high fructose corn syrup is the real driver of the current epidemic of heart attacks, strokes, cancer, dementia, and of course type 2 diabetes. But knowing what we know, you would think we would begin to make some changes. But all of us have our, I put it in air quotes, addictions. And definitely we need to make some changes. Other chemical toxins are also issues with the high fructose corn syrup. And when I was reading about this mercury grade chemical that may be found, and I did a little bit of a dive, and I said, oh my goodness, we don't know what we don't know until we know it. But then when we know it, we have to make some changes, because the mercury can add up in your system, and especially in children. And there are many parents who give their children freely of all these sugary products, and you may have that adding up in your system. Can you imagine that?
I have to tell you a quick story mm-hmm. about this. About I went to a wedding, and this was a couple, and they brought their 6 and 5 year olds with them. And what they didn't bring toys or activities for them to keep themselves them busy. They're busy. The way to keep them busy was glasses of Pepsi.
Pepsi. Wow.
Sugared Pepsi. And these little angels, they were just having Pepsi after. I was horrified.
Yeah.
But that's what people do.
And it was hard for you not to say something.
I didn't say something. I was very good. I was very socially appropriate.
And they found that mercury is found in 1 out of 3 products that one survey, they checked. 1 out of 3 had it, and you find it in dairy products, you find it in soft drinks, in salad dressing, in barbecue sauce, in syrup, in jams. It's everywhere, okay? The main reason you should give up high fructose corn syrup is that it's a big red flag for the very poor quality food. So if you see it everywhere, you should know that this is not something that you should be consuming. Yes.
So all of this horrific detail, so we need to come to a point where there is a way. There are people mm-hmm. who, once they are educated about this, once they realize either through education or through personal trauma mm-hmm. and going through bad choices, like my patient who was having Ketley.
Shade accepted. Accepted.
So there are ways to overcome sugar addiction. One way is gradual reduction. Slowly mm-hmm. cut back on sugary foods and drinks to avoid withdrawal symptoms. Mm-hmm. But like I said, nothing's going to happen if you do a cold turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's going to happen. You'll feel a little out of sorts. You will feel caffeine withdrawal because mm-hmm. A lot of the sugar is in caffeinated beverages.
Mm-hmm.
So just use some Tylenol.
Mm-hmm.
And within about 3 to 5 days, you will be fine. The other thing important to do is read labels.
Yes.
Take out those glasses, look yes. at the labels and the fine print in those boxes, and it would be an awakening experience for you in the grocery store. And look for the hidden sugars in processed foods. Processed foods should really be minimized in your repertoire, in your diet mm-hmm. as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And eating balanced meals, focusing on whole foods with fiber, protein, healthy fats,
mm-hmm.
and then my favorite, I'm the low-carb queen. So try the low-carb diet. You know, it'll really take away your cravings for sugar, because if you avoid white flour, white rice, potatoes, and sugar, because they have a high glycemic index and they raise your blood sugar dramatically and then it falls dramatically and then you feel out of sorts. So if you avoid these foods, you will feel a whole lot better.
And I just want to interject for those who are vegetarians. I am vegetarian. And you are able to still manage by avoiding some of these, refined products. You can have whole grains. You can have lots of vegetables. You can have lots of fruits. There's so much more we can eat and not have to consume some of that. Yes.
Drinking water regularly.
Yes.
To reduce the sugar cravings. And I tell patients that, water is really gives you a whole bunch of energy, and it reduces your appetite. So it's your friend.
It does.
It really makes you feel so much better. And doing healthy substitutes, replacing sugary snacks with fruit, nuts, or yogurt, being conscious, doing mindful eating. So we have this thing that the time that really problems occur is when a person is completely diverted with the television
mm-hmm.
or with their phone
mm-hmm.
and they're eating.
Mm-hmm.
So we made sure, you know, when the children even were little, that we ate at the dinner table.
Correct.
And there was no distraction. The television was never on.
Nope.
So be conscious of eating and what you are eating, and savor that time, pun intended, because doing that, just the mindless eating, just makes you just fill up with a whole bunch of junk. And you can seek support if the sugar cravings are difficult to manage. You can consult a dietitian or a therapist, or like we said earlier, your primary care doc. They can make a referral. Purging your kitchen is a very important thing. Looking at every single label in your kitchen and your pantry. Count how many products you have in your house that contain high fructose corn syrup. Throw them out and find replacements that are free of it. And if you must, you can have some sugar. I mean, sugar is obviously, it is ubiquitous. You can have a little sugar, but don't add it to your food.
Right.
That is the a very key piece. And the one thing that is your enemy for your health is the high fructose corn syrup. You'll be healthier, our planet will be healthier, and we'll have a healthier generation of children.
Yes. It's sad. I think sometimes parents cultivate that taste in their children by offering them these as pacifiers, you know.
Oh, so, like I said, yeah, you know, like in the wedding.
In that wedding.
Pepsi.
So we can choose to do something different. Some other approaches for treating these addictions. CBT. CBT is good for, you name it, it works. Just like water is good, just like exercise is good.
Cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah, cognitive behavioral therapy, correct. Overeaters Anonymous, they have a similar 12-step program as AA. Weight Watchers, Sugar and Carb Addicts Anonymous, and Food Addicts Anonymous. There are support groups out there if you want, but how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Yes, you know the answer now. One, but the light bulb has to want to change.
Memorize that.
Yes.
So if it comes to the point where the sugar addiction is so severe that besides the dietitian and the support that your family physician provides, you also need medications. We have a plethora of medications. And in our food addict treatment episode, we talked about metformin, Wellbutrin, naltrexone. But I want to talk a little bit really quickly about the GLP-1 agonists, because they are also pervading our life, because our celebrities are using them and we are so taken by what we see on the media. So GLP-1s are like, some of the names are Ozempic, Mounjaro, Wegovy, and Zepbound. And they definitely work. There's no two things about that. They are one of those medications that medicine will remember as being pretty historic in changing our lives. But they only work, and I analogize them to a medical bypass as opposed to a surgical bypass. So it's like a medical bypass, true. They work, the person loses a whole bunch of weight, but their relationship to food must change for the weight loss to be long-standing. Right. Otherwise, it's going to be the yo-yo effect.
The same thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think that if you would elaborate on the 8 laws of health, I think it would really help us.
You know, and I am a fan. I think we should spend one segment, maybe one day, just reviewing the 8 laws of health, because I don't do it justice in just cursorily reviewing it. But your proper diet, and to maintain good health, it just makes sense to have protein, to have carbs, to have vegetables, to have fruit. So if you're looking at your plate and all you see is a mound of white stuff on it, that should be a clue that it's not a complete meal. So think about a diet that includes those elements. It's very, very important to drink water. And you can read all a bunch of things about how much you should drink, but the classic number is like 8 to 10 glasses a day. But the more the better, unless you have some other medical reasons why you can drink water. Drink lots of water. Exercising is your best friend. And I share this with my patients often, and I say it tongue in cheek, but I said, if I could do one thing, and I could bottle exercise in little bottles.
Exercise in a bottle, yeah.
And I would sell it from my trunk on the corner of Vernon Airport. I would just sell little bottles of exercise, and I could just, become a mega millionaire, because it works for so many things. And the list is Oh, it's a long list of what it helps with. Get some fresh air. Sometimes people are indoors too much. In our younger generation, they spend so much time indoors. They need to get outside, get fresh air, get sunlight. Get sunlight. And we have this thing that we do as a culture. We binge on everything. We binge TV. We binge. Temperance, it's such a good thing to keep in mind. I read something once years and years ago that when you fix your plate, you should fix everything you're going to eat. Look at it. Does that look like it should be, you know, satisfying? Is that all you need? As opposed to getting up, getting seconds, getting thirds. Just get one plate of food, get your dessert, get whatever else you're going to have. Have it right there. Temperance. Eat and then stop. And then definitely get your sleep. We need to be aware that sleeping between 9 and 11 is the best time. Do not get into midnight, 1 o'clock. And those who work nights, I feel sorry for you guys. It's too late. It's over. Life is over for you. But, you know, we need to sleep.
I really enjoyed one time when you talked about the 8 laws of health. The last time you talked about that window in which the melatonin secretion at midnight. Mm-hmm. Like if you miss that window,
if you miss it
really is hard to
sleep.
It's
harder to fall asleep and you don't get as rested. One author said that if you get 4 hours before midnight, it's better than 8 hours after midnight. It's not good for you.
Yes, yeah. It makes sense.
And also, we always encourage people to have a sense of a higher power to help you navigate this crazy life we lead. But you can make changes if you want. You're not locked in. And as Dr. Islam said earlier, if you just begin to gradually cut back on whatever you're doing and replace it with some healthier behaviors, you can conquer this. Yes.
Yes, and you'll be so much the better for it.
So much.
So much. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, and we are well on our way in discussing the behavioral addictions, and in the next episode we will deal with the addiction to sex. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Kathleen Daniels.
And our executive producer is a very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Please share this podcast with friends and family, for it is only through education that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that the disease of addiction causes. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. You can listen in continuity from the beginning or else just pick the episode that interests you. And with all the challenges of life, do remember, patience in difficult times and gratitude always. We'll see you soon.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners and administered by the Arts Commission.